The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Command Zone. This is episode number 27. My name is Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And exciting. We passed the halfway mark for a full year.
We're into our seventh month of...
Oh, that's right. Seventh month.
Well... We skipped some weeks because of the holidays and whatever. Well, there, if people don't know, there's 52 weeks in a year, so 26 would be half of a year. So we're on 27.
Yep, we're on 27.
Anyway.
We're finally crossing into the take us seriously realm, hopefully.
Take us seriously. No, don't. Please don't do that. Don't take us seriously.
Yeah. So we have a fun episode today. We're going to answer a user question that actually extends into a deeper, I guess, realm of questioning and sort of how you can answer questions productively yourself. And then we're going to spotlight a commander called Anna Fenza the Foremost.
Anna Fenza, Jimmy's new brew.
Yeah, my new brew. I've never made a token deck before, So this is my take on the token deck, which, I don't know, kind of hedges in a different sort of a couple of different places, and it comes up with something that's very good stuffy.
Yeah, it's cool. We haven't really talked a lot about like a good stuff deck, and you know, you've got a token theme that's sort of the win con, but yeah, it's sort of a value token deck.
I do love
it's a good
value.
Take. Yeah. I like it. It looks powerful. So we've got a we had a recent email, and we've actually had a few emails like this. And there's an old proverb, I'm sure you've heard it, you know, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime.
Give a man a pizza, he's
Although,
got a
I
pizza.
Think whoever said that intrinsically doesn't understand how fishing works, because I've been fishing many times, and you don't always catch fish. Anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
But the idea is like, you know, there's a question, and instead of just answering the specific question, teaching you how to answer the question yourself, I think, can be helpful. So let me read the email. It says, hello, I recently bought a Burning Wish for my Purphoros EDH deck. Do you have any suggestions of sorcery cards that might be useful that I could put into my sideboard for the deck? Please suggest many cards because it's more likely that I will have a lot of the suggested cards in the actual deck. Thank you so much, Gabriel Robinson. Now,
good question. Thank you, Gabriel.
Thank you, Gabriel. Let's read Burning Wish. You want to read it?
Yeah, so we mentioned this. I think this is on my top 10 red cards list. So if you got that from there, Gabe, then... You're welcome, buddy.
I'm going to assume we did.
Yeah, Burning Wish is one in a red for a sorcery, and it says you may choose a sorcery card you own from outside the game, reveal that card, and put it into your hand. Exile Burning Wish.
So Burning Wish is similar to like Sponsire of Ulamog or one of those cards that allows you...
It's a cycle of Wish series as well, Glittering Wish and all the other ones.
It's a this type of effect hasn't been really prevalent in Magic. There's cards that do it, but not a ton. But it's basically the idea that like, okay, I play this card, and then I go get a card that's not in my deck. It's in a box of cards I happen to have with me, and I grab that card. And so some playgroups don't like this type of effect and maybe don't allow it. You know, it's not banned by the official ban list or anything, so it's fine. I don't know what the rules are for sideboards. I mean, generally in a competitive situation, this would say grab a card from your sideboard not outside the game. Like, you couldn't go fly home, get the card, come back. You know, you'd have to have it with you, and your sideboard would still have to be of the legal amount.
Yeah.
So depending on your playgroup, that could be 15 cards in your sideboard, or if your playgroup doesn't care, it could be 20 cards you've got, you know, 200 cards you've got in a box to the side. So it's kind of hard to define how many cards that's going to be. You're going to have to sort of know your playgroup and know it's legal. But I would say generally like 15 cards.
Yeah, 15 cards is fine.
Is an allowable
amount.
Maybe
if you want to, I don't know, go up to like 20 because you have a 100-card commander deck. But honestly, I don't even think if you could find 15 different sorceries you would use.
That would you probably want, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's, at a certain point, you're just going to be having two cards that do the same effect, and there's no reason to do that.
And honestly, I think this is totally fine in commander groups. It's just something where you play, like, hey guys, I have a sideboard for my deck. And if people are like, why? You're like, well, I have a card that may fetch something from there or whatever.
And so, I don't even think you'd have to announce it first. Like, if somebody plays Burning Wish and goes, oh yeah, I have this box here and these are the cards that I, and I'd be like, okay, fine.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's what the card allows you to do. So that's, to me, that's fine. But, you know, like I said, not
meanwhile,
all
players they're
are the
playing
same.
Deadeye Navigator, so you're like, I'm just going to play Burning Wish. So you can say nothing about it. Thanks.
So, and also, we're going to keep this discussion general. We're not going to, we'll try to help answer Gabe's question, Gabriel's question. Sorry. I don't know if you go by Gabe or Gabriel. I guess I should call you Gabriel.
Yeah.
Along the way, but I will read Purphoros just because we'll probably reference it a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
So Purphoros, God of the Forge, is 3 red for a legendary enchantment creature god. He's indestructible. As long as your devotion to red is less than 5, Purphoros isn't a creature. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Purphoros deals 2 damage to each opponent. So that's the powerful one. And then he also has an activated ability for 2 red. Creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. And you can do that as many times as you can pay the mana cost.
Yeah.
So really, though, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, he deals 2 damage to each opponent. That's that's almost always the thing that's being abused in Purphoros decks.
Yep.
Because it hits all your opponents at once. So it's, Purphoros is a very, 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 very powerful EDH deck. It just has the ability to...
It's a powerful EDH card in the right decks. Like, Prosh loves this guy.
Yeah, it's like the most powerful card in most token decks.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, just so we can reference that later, although we will talk about sort of philosophically in general. So we'll mention cards from outside of just mono red.
We're sort of making more of like an algorithm of how to approach a question like this and how to like constructively go at it so that you can get a good answer out of it each time, essentially.
And really, it doesn't just have to apply to Burning Wish. It can apply to any card.
Demonic Tutor is a card it could also apply to. Like, what card should I fetch in this moment to deal with the board?
So the first question I like to ask about cards like this specifically, but cards in general, is, you know, what's the most powerful this card can be? What's the least powerful it can be? You know, that's how I would maybe start to go about deciding how to utilize the card. So, you know, what makes Burning Wish powerful?
It's a tutor.
It's a tutor, but it also tutors something that isn't in your deck. Now, so that begs the question, like, what do you want that's not in your deck, but you sometimes want it? You know, what makes that powerful? The fact that the cards aren't in your deck. Well, there are whenever you start making a deck, right, what do? You usually have like 300-400 cards and you start narrowing it down.
Yeah.
And usually there's a whole bunch of cards that they could go in your deck, but you decide not to because why? Because, you know, they're powerful, but only in specific circumstances.
Uh-huh.
So to me, Burning Wish is very specific to, like, it wants to go find narrow cards.
Yeah.
Because some of the most powerful cards in Magic are cards that only work in specific situations.
Yeah.
You know, let's take a card.
The cards that you also don't want to see in your hand in a lot of cases.
Yeah, let's take a card like, I'm just going to Shatterstorm. Shatterstorm just destroys all artifacts, right?
Yeah.
Well, that card is amazing. Maybe the most powerful card you could have if you're playing against an artifact deck or a deck that has 7 artifacts on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of times the card will do literally nothing.
Yeah.
Because there won't be a single artifact out. So that card's power level, it's the gap between how powerful it can be and how weak it can be is as big as it gets.
Yeah.
So those are the type of cards that Burning Wish usually will want to go find, right? Because Burning Wish says, oh, I can go find this card that's powerful right now, but if that card's not powerful right now, I can go find this other card that might be powerful in the situation I'm in. So that's sort of like looking at the card and saying, what does it do and what is it good at? You know, Burning Wish specifically, good at finding you that narrow answer that's good right now.
Yeah, and if you treat your sorcery sideboard as a toolbox of sorts, that's, you know, where Burning Wish shines. And that's where all the wishes shine because it's like... And also, like, a card sometimes it just might have way too high of a like converted mana cost to cast. Like,
that's
I can see
another narrow card.
Yeah, like, a card like Insurrection is great a lot of the time, but not always.
It sucks on turn 3.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrible. Yeah, if you have it in your opening hand, you basically mulliganed because you don't want it for at least 7-8 turns.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I can't even play it for that long, and that's exactly why,
Yeah, and that's why high casting cost spells are basically, they're similar to Shatterstorm, right? Mm-hmm. Because when you cast it, it's the most powerful thing ever, but then you can't cast it all the time, so because you just literally don't have enough mana. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, it's literally like not even a card in your hand. Like, it's not even there. Like, you can't cast it.
Yeah, and I'd much rather have a 1 and a red casting cost card that can find a bunch of things as opposed to an 8 casting cost card.
Exactly, because if you pull the 1 in the red Burning Wish and it's turn 5...
You feel much better about that in your
hands. You can go find something you can use right now.
Yeah.
Whereas if that's an Insurrection, it's like, well, this will be good, maybe, but it's not going to be good for 4 or 5 turns.
Yeah.
And then again, Insurrection is another card where, I mean, just to get specific about it, it really only works if there's a lot of creatures on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're playing against a Jaleva deck and something else that doesn't play, you know, the Nekusar deck, oh, great. So I get 2 creatures.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know,
deal 4 damage because of Purphoros and
maybe get like a free activated, you know, it's just like that. Insurrection does very little in that instance, you know, and I'd say obviously Insurrection is very powerful. And most of the time you play it and you win the game. But there will be times when there's certain decks you're facing and it just doesn't do very much, you know. So that's what I would look for cards like this. You know, what are some other, you know, cards that maybe well, let's talk about. You know, I think a lot of people would naturally go towards like staple cards. You know, they would like Wheel of Fortune, you know, in their sideboard. But, well, let's talk about something specifically here. And I don't know the exact rule on how these cards work, but I don't believe you could have a card in your sideboard that's in your deck. Is that correct?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
It would just break. As soon as you play it, it would be like, you were broken the core rule of Commander.
Yeah, it still has to be Singleton.
Yeah, it has to be Singleton, so...
So you couldn't have Wheel of Fortune in your deck and also in your sideboard.
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense, I don't think.
You know, what are the other staple cards we've talked about? You know, Insurrection's one, something like Gamble.
Gamble, yeah, Red's only tutor.
Yeah.
Or I guess sort of demonic tutor-esque card.
Right. Now, of those three, you know, you could have all three in your sideboard and only have Burning Wish in your main deck, but that seems foolish. It seems like, well, I want Wheel of Fortune, because then I have to draw Burning Wish to get one of those.
To get
other
one of those, yeah.
Yeah, it's much better to... have the ability to just draw Wheel of Fortune naturally or draw Gamble naturally.
Yeah, so there is a nice little balance then you have to make, because after you cast Burning Wish, you have to exile it. So you can't just be like, well, cool, now I can make... No, this takes up the space of 7 cards that I can now make more space for. It's like, well, you're still going to want to have a lot of those in your deck.
If it's powerful enough, it needs to be in your main deck. So Burning Wish actually only really wants to go get stuff that's not quite powerful enough to be in the main deck or not consistent enough.
Yeah.
To be in your main deck. Yeah, so...
It's perfect for that kind of card that when you draw it, let's say you play 10 games with the deck, and 3 out of the 10 times you draw that card, and it is the nut. It is the best card that happens at that point, but the other 7 times it's either just okay or it doesn't do anything. Like, those are the cards you want to be on the lookout for. Something like Gamble, where it's like, go 2 for
That's
a card.
That's good every time.
It's good every time, yeah, even if you have to discard.
So. Yeah. So what are some other sort of categories? You know, anti-artifact stuff, we talked about Shatterstorm.
Vandal Blast,
Shattering
Although
Spree.
I would actually argue that Vandal Blast deserves a main deck slot.
It can. Yeah. I'm just saying that type of effect, you know, you could have it. You know, if you're going to make your sideboard of 15 or 20 cards or whatever it is, you don't want 2 things that destroy all artifacts in there. You just want 1. So pick any one, you know, depending on what colors you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to be sorcery. And then that would be a thing that's very narrow but very powerful in the right circumstance. You know, you talked about high casting cost stuff, high CMC spells.
Like, yeah.
You know, other Enter the Infinite.
That card is so nuts, yeah.
Oftentimes, a deck that wants Enter the Infinite wants it in its main deck. But,
and it's because it's going to cheat it into play somehow, usually.
Yeah, exactly. But I could see a deck that's like, well, I'm not based around Enter the Infinite, but if I happen to have that amount of mana and I get Burning Wish, I'll go get it.
Oh, yeah, so absolutely.
It could be in that sideboard.
And it doesn't hurt you to have a couple of like super bomby cards in your sideboard that are, you know, 10 plus.
That way, if I get Burning Wish and it happens to be turn 15, and I happen to have 15 mana, then
perfect.
I might as well go get... Yeah, exactly.
You can fetch it and play it in the same turn.
Yeah. So. Something like Ingaric's Wake, which is a 9 mana, one-sided board wipe, so it destroys everybody else's creatures and planeswalkers, but not yours.
Mm-hmm. Graveyard Hate, I like this one. So, Morningtide.
Yeah.
And Graveyard Hate, I think, is actually super specific, and it's actually... a lot about the deck that we're going to deck tech today is Graveyard Hate. Like, you could build a whole deck around Graveyard Hate, but go against a deck that doesn't care, and you are not in a happy place. So
I think Graveyard Hate is sort of one of the flagship narrow things where like when it's powerful, it absolutely destroys the deck that you're playing against. Mm-hmm. But then when it's a large percentage of decks, it literally does nothing to them. Like, like they literally don't care. It's like you burned a card. Like,
yeah, or like they toss everything that goes, you know, something, okay, great, you exiled my entire graveyard. That affected one card that I was going to use from there. Maybe.
Maybe. You know. And then it's like, okay, oh, well, I'll just play a different card and we'll just, you know.
Yeah. So meanwhile, they're drawing 15 a turn. You're like, oh, well, that wasn't effective.
Yeah, and I just basically use my turn to do literal nothing. Yeah, that's a good one. I think board wipes are good ones. Now, you want board wipes in your main deck, but you don't want, because board wipes are generally just always useful, but you don't want 50 of them. So Burning Wish can also just be another sort of like safety valve.
Yeah, you wrote one here actually that I really like, which is Blasphemous Act. Because that is the card that says I'm situational, like on the text.
Yeah, Blasphemous Act is 8 and a red. It's a sorcery, obviously. It says Blasphemous Act costs one less to cast for each creature on the battlefield. So if there's 8 creatures on the battlefield, it just costs one red. And it... Blasphemous Act deals 13 damage to each creature. So it's a situational board wipe, whereas for one, it's way too expensive unless there's a lot of creatures out.
Yeah.
For two, if there's somebody's got like Avacyn out, then you don't even want it.
Yep.
So, but when it's good, it's awesome. It's just one red and kill everything, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a very good card to go get with Burning Wish that maybe you wouldn't want it in your main deck, although a lot of decks still do want it in the main deck, but it's an example of that, of a type of narrow card. What else? Oh, here's a good one. And this one's mean. I'm not saying everybody should do this, but depending on your playgroup and the level of meanness that's prevalent, you know, color hosing cards.
Oh, right.
Cards like Tsunami. Tsunami destroys all islands. It's a green sorcery. Or Acid Rain, which is a blue sorcery that destroys all forests.
Yeah.
You know, those are really mean cards and also super narrow because you have to be playing against a blue deck with a lot of islands.
And a lot of red decks actually have specifically anti-blue cards from its early days.
Yeah, so. Something like Red Elemental Blast or...
Yeah, yeah.
But so color hosing cards, sorceries, obviously, for Burning Wish, but color hosing cards are very narrow but super powerful. Like they can literally just shut off a deck. So if you're in the type of playgroup that is cutthroat, then those are great cards to go get with Burning Wish because it's like, I go get this card and I just destroy your deck.
Yeah. That one guy is not very happy around the table, unfortunately.
What else?
Well, we can talk about stuff specifically that is good for the commander that you're building around.
Oh, that's a good point.
So like you wrote down a new card from Constant Arcade, which is just Hordling Outburst, which is you get to put 3 goblins into play. And it may not be, you know, it may just be that thing like, dang, I need to just do 6 more damage right now. And
yes.
I have a Burning Wish and look at that. It just does it.
Or Goblin Rally puts 4
right.
1/1s into play. It's a little bit more expensive. So maybe that's like, I just need to do 8 damage. Mm-hmm. Like you could foresee a situation where, man, if I can just do 6 damage to everybody, I win.
Yeah.
Or basically win. And so you just need that card that puts 3 tokens in right now. So, you know, that's Purphoros specific.
Or something like Hordling Outburst if you're like, well, I need to sack some more stuff to my Goblin Bombardment to kill everyone. So just like, I think always having at least 1 token generator is always handy because there may be a situation where you're like, well, if I can just only get 3 more blockers, I can survive. Because you don't necessarily need to be in the aggro side of things. You know, this is because it's sorcery speed, you're only going to be casting it during your turn, so you're sort of setting up something potentially for the next turn to not die to, or you're doing something that's aggro and trying to kill everyone with it.
Exactly. And I think it's a really good point to have, you know, whatever your commander is, you know, to have a few cards in that sideboard that are what your deck's trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, so all the other stuff like Tsunami, your deck's not trying to destroy all islands all the time. It's just like, well, sometimes I want to do that.
Yeah.
What your deck's trying to do is put a bunch of creatures out with Purphoros in play and do damage to all your opponents. So you do want some cards that put a bunch of creatures out so that if Purphoros is in play and you see that opening, you can just win the game sometimes.
Yeah.
And this could go for, you know, if you're playing the other wishes or other cards that do things like this, this could be like, I just need a demon in my hand for Kalia, you know, to have an angel and a demon and a dragon in there or whatever. Or, you know, get those cards that do have a couple cards in that sideboard that are
synergistic.
That are sort of like the main plan of your deck.
Yeah.
But they're not the best cards because those cards would already be in your deck. They're just like those cards that almost made the deck, you know. In, you know, if it's a Nekusar deck, you know, any card that dings people for how many cards they have in their hand or when they draw cards,
right?
Like, you know, that didn't make the main deck.
Sorcery specifically.
Yeah, well, that's for Burning Wish, but you know, just for this type of effect. You know, if it's Glittering Wish, it can be a multicolored card, or if it's you know, if it's one of the other wishes, you know, you can get different things. And just, you know, philosophically, what you generally want is narrow cards, but I would say you also want a couple slots that are just like synergize with my deck.
Yeah,
you know.
I like the idea, too, of the wishes, because it also kind of equalizes the power level. These are, in general, not super expensive,
right?
Except for the ones that are played, I think, in Modern / Legacy during the Jeskai Ascendancy Terror Reign days.
Reign of Terror?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that officially over with the bannings now?
I think it's officially over. Or at least... There awaits a new deck build to be built to really, I guess, make use of it. But, I mean... So, like, I really like these cards because they give your deck a lot of flexibility.
Right.
And when you're playing a lot of games, it also, I think it spices it up a lot, because it does give you an extra little sort of board to interact with that may help you in a situation where someone may be, like, playing their Vampiric Tutor, their Demonic Tutors, all their very expensive cards. And you're like, I can go wish for something.
And you can, and most of these cards, you know, narrow cards are not expensive cards to buy.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that destroys all artifacts is not expensive to buy. Stuff that, you know... Because they're so weak in every other situation that they're generally, you know, they're just not used that much. But what you can do is, because situationally that card is so powerful, you can equal somebody's really expensive card because, you know, you can have... It's kind of like a charm almost, right? Charm's the modal cards that say, you can do this, or you can do this, or you can do this, or you can do this. Well, Burning Wish or Glittering Wish or the Wishes can sort of... say those same things, like you can destroy all artifacts, or you can destroy all islands, or you can destroy all creatures, or you can, you know, hate out somebody's graveyard, or you can, you know.
Yeah, as long as you have the mana for it.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the modes that can have, which is pretty powerful when you think about it.
Yeah, and I forgot who was saying it, but someone had said they derived a sick pleasure from seeing someone's expensive card get taken out by a very, very cheap card.
Yeah,
which
well.
I always think is fun. And also, like, sort of the beauty of Commander, and I'm sure Jason Ault would have something to say about this from Brainstorm Brewery, that we just do it right. We're looking for these weird, like, modal / cards that do one thing very specifically that are going to not cost anything, but potentially could see a huge spike in, like, price later on. People realize, like, oh, wow, that actually is a very powerful card. Vandal Blast, I'm looking at you. Anything with Overload on it, I think, is a winner in my book. So going back to sort of the idea of answering this question, like Josh said, when you go about, like, thinking about a question like this, like, I have something and I want to do something with it, how do I go about it? You know, really examine all the aspects of it. And so in this case, it's, I can fetch a sorcery, I know that I'm going to be doing something that is not in my main deck, and I am trying to figure out what it's going to be. So, like we said, you're looking for situational stuff, you're looking for stuff that you want to pull out in response to something else, or something that you can use to either synergize with your general, or just maybe make one interaction go off to find that third combo piece that maybe exists in your deck, but also exists in your sideboard, so that you can sort of get both at the same time. And you can give yourself a little more consistency with cards like this.
Yeah, and I think also, like, pay attention to cards that you thought about putting in the deck, but the gap was really big between, like, when it's at its most powerful and when it's at its least powerful. Like, in general, your main deck wants to contain cards that at their average power level is high, and their worst case scenario is not that bad.
Yeah,
you know, because you just don't want to be drawing cards where, like, well, this doesn't do anything. But those cards that sometimes don't do anything, but sometimes do the most amazing thing ever, those cards are what Burning Wish wants to get. And I'd say cards that do things similar to Burning Wish play along the same lines. You want those narrow cards.
Very narrow indeed.
Narrow
but
indeed.
Very effective at the same time. So yes, thank you for submitting the question, Gabriel. If you guys have questions that may potentially be answered either via email or on the show itself, you can send us an email at commandcast@rocketjump.com, and one of us will look at it.
We look at them. We try to answer most of them.
Yeah,
and,
try to
you know,
actually, I think we've answered all of them so far.
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely get back to everyone.
And Gabriel, we didn't reply, but we are now. So
yeah, Gabriel, we hope you enjoyed.
Gabriel
your,
got a whole show.
Your 20-minute reply to your question. Also, you have to let us know if these cards end up doing work for you, because we'd like to know if you find anything that we may have missed. And in the world of red sorceries, there are a lot of really weird random cards that we will definitely have missed.
Well, and also like people with Burning Wish in cards that have red but aren't red.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, can use it to go get a whole bunch of cards. In fact, I'd say Burning Wish is way more powerful outside of mono red than it is inside, because red's just a narrow color in general. It doesn't have a huge toolbox and stuff it can do. So, and also, make sure, like, you know, one of the things I love about the show the most is the comment section on Rocket Jump. You know, after we do something like the last episode, it's really fun to go back and just look at and be like, man, oh yeah, there's all these other cards that maybe I didn't think of. Or maybe, you know, people are like, what about this card? And you're like,
you're right. You are completely right. We did not come up with that card.
Yeah. And you're like, man, I've never even played some of those cards. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I mean, there's cards like Karmic Guide and stuff that everybody's played, but there's some niche cards that people are like, this card's always been really strong for me. And you look at it and you're like, holy crap, like that's a good card. I should put that.
Thanks so
it
helps. Spec.
Yeah, exactly. So it helps everybody, you know, sort of learn together.
Same with the people that are also listening to this show. If you haven't checked out the comment section, I think I probably read at least three cards in every episode where I'm like, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And that's all on rocketjump.com.
Yeah, it's like group knowledge, you know, everybody gets to pool their knowledge and everybody gets to learn from everybody else. I mean, Jimmy and I are hosting the show, but we have so many listeners that, you know, have probably played Commander as long or longer than we have and know more cards than we know.
And I'm relatively new to the format still, and I'm always trying. I mean, like, I would never say that I'm a professional at Commander.
I don't think such a thing exists.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm very happy to always be sort of leveling up and finding new stuff.
Yeah,
and
the comment section is definitely a good
place. And, of
course,
not making as many rules mistakes.
Gotta learn to play good.
Gotta learn to play good. So playing good, let's talk about our Commander Spotlight for today.
Whoa, we got British.
Yeah, I guess so.
You sound like you're from London.
An offense of the foremost.
That's like...
She's royalty. I feel like someone's like...
I mean, I should be laughing like this. Very good joke.
All our British listeners are just like...
Sorry.
Face palm in disbelief.
Sorry. You know the funny thing? I wonder... I would totally random, but you know, there's like British actors all the time in American movies, and they do American accents, and like,
it doesn't go the other way around, right?
Not very often.
Yeah,
but I'm like, their American accent's good. I never really like think about it. Every once in a while, you'd be like, oh, that word was a little weird, but most of the time, I don't even think about it. I wonder if Brits listening to Americans do British accents.
Oh yeah, I'm
if they're
positive.
Just like, oh, that's horrible.
Well, the thing is, like, there are like so many different realms of the UK that there are
but
different
America
accents
too.
In each.
There's,
yeah, it's
like,
true.
There's like Southern accent, there's the East Coast accent, there's like
I think
Boston, and there's
I think the
Midwest.
Bland American accent though is so just like, okay, yeah, they're American, as opposed to if you go to Britain and you're like, you're combining your like high-end British accent with your
Cockney.
Accent from Cockney accent, yeah, then I don't know. I feel like I also just feel like the acting training in the UK is just better.
Oh, it's absolutely better. They're shown by how, like, percentage-wise, how many of them are professional actors, like, percentage-wise compared to how many Brits there are compared to how many Americans are, like, in the world.
Yeah.
Like, they're, like, half of Hollywood.
Yep. And, you know, speaking as an actor, it's very true. Like, the American acting style is very, like...
it's method, right?
It's emotional. Yeah, you want to get into the scene. You want to deliver a one performance out of 10. And that is it. You know, that's perfect. That's got everything. And maybe you can be more consistent, but you know, as long as you get that 1 out of 10 and you're there for that scene, then great. You know, but I think the British acting method is much more traditional, and it's like, no, it's based in stage and theatrical stuff, so you need to be consistently doing something to a high level. And maybe you get to a 9.5 out of 10, whereas the crazy American can hit that 10 out of 10
but
once.
But he's a 6 the rest of
but
the time.
But he's a 6, the rest
Speaking
of the time.
Speaking as an editor.
Yeah.
I will back you up on this claim. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Generally.
Good to know.
Generally speaking.
Good to know.
But in fairness, I think we should continue the rest of the episode in our best British accent.
I don't disagree. An offender. You're the foremost. I don't know what kind of British person I'm being, but
some kind of old important.
Yeah, it feels
one.
Stereotypical. Yeah. Like Bill Nye or whatever. So, An Offense of the Foremost is a Khan of Tarkir, and she came out in Khans of Tarkir.
She's so the Abzan Khan.
Yeah, so she...
Or she's one of the two Abzan Khans now, because yep. we went back in time and we found another
one. Dagatar, the Adamant, is now the other one. So Anafenza the Foremost is a... cost 3 mana total. It's a white, black, and green. Mm-hmm. And this color is actually, I think, a very popular commander color because other Gave... Oh, no, sorry, not Gave. Carador, Ghost yep. Chieftain... are these same colors, and it's really good for a lot of reanimation strategies, ramp. It's got a lot of the, I think, core EDH things that people really like.
Yep.
And so Anafenza, I chose to build the deck around because I was really interested in the second line of text on her. So we'll read her. She's black, white, and green for a 4/4 legendary creature, human soldier.
So a 3-mana 4/4, she's already pretty good.
Pretty good.
That's
yeah.
pretty good. Yeah. Yeah.
You can already see a Voltron strategy being built around this because getting out a powerful commander right. that early is really nice.
We're not gonna do that, but you
no.
could.
Yeah, you could. So whenever Anafenza the Foremost attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on another tapped creature you control. Now that's a good that's a good ability, definitely for limited and for constructed. But it's not what we're building around here. The most important piece of text. If a creature card will be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead.
So it just naturally hoses creature-based graveyard strategies yeah. pretty hard if she's out.
And notably, it says if it goes into their graveyard from anywhere, so if they're discarding it out of their hand, if they're milling it off the top of their deck.
If it just gets destroyed while it was in play, mm-hmm, it just goes straight to exile.
Exile, yeah. So this actually just completely hoses the Sultai Khan of Khans of Tarkir.
Yeah, sorry, Sidisi. Sorry, BDM. Did you... Let's be honest. Like, did you think, like, hey, I need to build this deck because we did that episode with BDM?
And we may eventually play him in real life, yes.
You're, like, getting ready.
Well,
you're
mean,
like, I'm going to see him at GP Vegas, and I'm going to crush him.
Going to crush him. You know, it was kind of half that, but it was also playing against decks like Carador, where it yeah. was just brutally oppressive, and it just seemed unfair that everyone else was playing with their normal decks while someone that was dredging stuff up or playing with Carador.
They got two decks.
They got two decks, yeah, and no one did anything almost ever to respond to it, because
right.
I think our meta is very light on graveyard hate. / graveyard control. And so if you had a deck that abused it like Carador does, then you were in big time trouble.
Well, graveyard shenanigans, there's this cyclical nature to how they go in a meta mm-hmm. and in a play group. And usually what happens is somebody does a graveyard deck and it's very powerful. And then somebody creates a deck with graveyard hate. And graveyard hate, it's just like, it's like a switch. It's like there's graveyard hate or there's not.
Yeah.
And if there's graveyard hate, the graveyard deck's done.
Yep.
Like it just can't do anything. So then that person stops playing the graveyard deck, which means the graveyard hate deck sort of sucks. So then people go back to normal decks.
Yeah.
And then somebody goes, hey, nobody's playing any graveyard hate. And they create a graveyard deck. And then
I haven't seen Rest in Peace in a long
yeah.
time.
And then the cycle continues. So usually yep. your playgroup will go through sort of graveyard eras.
Eras, yeah.
And the era will start with very powerful graveyard decks coming into their own because nobody's playing graveyard hate. And it will end with... you know, people playing a lot of graveyard hate, and therefore the graveyard deck's going away, and then going back to normal decks, like I said, blah, blah, blah.
I'm very excited to end the era of graveyard hate.
No, yeah, of graveyard shenanigans, you
yeah.
mean.
And actually, this is a deck that I've always wanted to build a token deck, so I sort of formatted this deck to be a kind of control-y, but more just a lot of value and good stuff, because I would love to play this deck when the graveyard hate isn't necessary as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'd love you to play this deck when we're playing against BDM's Sidisi deck, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And Anafenza is just going to look at Sidisi and just be like, nope.
Sorry. Mm-hmm.
So sorry.
She's going to make that, like,
yeah.
slice neck, you know, gesture.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about some of the downsides of Anafenza. And the first one that I can think of is if there is someone that is playing with a graveyard, they're going to hate you a lot.
Well, they basically, if somebody, like, if they have Carador and you flip over Anafenza before the game begins, they're like, well, I have to just kill that
yeah,
person
I have to
as
kill
fast
that,
as
yeah,
possible.
As many times as possible.
Otherwise, I'm done. The thing is, the upside, though, on the opposite end is if they're not playing with graveyard shenanigans, Anafenza is not that scary.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
Anafenza is just a 3-mana 4/4 that may eventually
that doesn't
affect
do much,
their,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
to them. Like, it puts 1/1 counters on stuff. Who cares?
Yep.
You know, and it may be slightly annoying, like if they have an eternal witness in their mm-hmm. deck or a couple of flashback cards or a
yeah.
snapcast. No, snapcaster doesn't care.
Yeah, snapcaster is definitely. Yeah, exactly.
So it's that. I'd say that's actually an upside in general, but it can mm-hmm. be like you can just make eternal enemies with somebody like from right off the bat. Too.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're like, I have Sidisi. Oh, crap.
I mean, the nice thing about this is I played this deck probably 4 to 5 times now just to play test and sort of tweak it. And I actually don't cast Anafenza about 50% of the time.
You've finally seen the light, Jimmy.
I've seen the light, yeah.
You've seen the light. You're coming over to my side.
Yeah, well, when I was building it, I was actually thinking, it's like, well, you know what? It'd be nice to have a deck that isn't super reliant on the general. Like, Marchesa's right. deck is... If she's not out, your deck's not doing anything. Yeah, exactly.
It's very nice to have a couple decks in your collection that it's just like the deck itself is what's powerful, not the commander.
So you'll find with this deck is that it has a lot of toolboxy-esque stuff to it, and it isn't overly reliant on getting Anafenza out to win the game, because just hating out someone's graveyard isn't going to win you the game. You need to find other alternative ways of going about it. So the game plan is to outvalue and sort of outlast your opponents.
Outlast, pun intended.
Abzan. You want to create a lot of tokens. You want to get a lot of value out of Enter the Battlefield effects. And you want to back it up with one-sided board wipes. And when I say one-sided board wipes, we'll get to it. But essentially, board wipes that use Anafenza's ability to benefit you over them, but still accomplish wiping the board, essentially. You want to abuse cards that do two things at once. So
just
like
value cards.
Value cards like Martial Coup, where you can board wipe and have tokens. Stuff at the end. Yeah. A lot of Enter the Battlefield stuff. A lot of creatures that sort of that use your own graveyard. Because if you notice, Anafenza specifically says creatures from opponents' graveyards. Yeah.
That's just mean. I'll shut off all your graveyard shenanigans, but I still have some.
I still got some. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the first category of cards, which is just straight token generation. And that begins with
Avenger of Zendikar.
Yeah, one of my favorites. This card was in the Legacy Cube on Modo, and every single time I saw it being played, I'm like, wow, that is incredibly broken.
It's just, well, it's got a casting cost that is sometimes prohibitive.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a 7-mana creature. It's 5/2 green for a 5/5 creature elemental. When Avenger of Zendikar enters the battlefield, put a 0/1 green plant creature token on the battlefield for each land you control. It has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may put a +1/+1 creature on each plant creature you control. So he puts out a ton of guys as soon as you cast him. Let's say you just cast him 4/7 without a Soul Ring or anything. You have 7 0/1s on the battlefield and a 5/5.
That's the thing about him is like you can't really cheat him out in normal ways because he becomes less powerful when you cheat him out in some ways. So let's just say use a Gilded Lotus in 4 mana, which, never mind, you can't do that. A Gilded Lotus in 5 mana.
You're only getting 5 guys
instead of the 7. You know, it's just a little bit. But when you get to 7 lands and you play them, I mean, even if just 5 is fine. You get 5 0/1s, and then every time you play a land, all those dudes are actually not
0/1s. They become 1/2s, then 2/3s. And they can attack.
Talk about making the math hard on us, by the way.
Yeah, that's the other thing I realized with this deck, is I need a lot of dice and a lot of different counters and tokens.
Because it makes them into 1/2s? Like, why couldn't you just give them +1, +0?
Because I'm making life hard for everyone, Josh.
No, well, you didn't design the card. You did?
I know. Yeah, I didn't. It was all me. So Avenger of Zendikar is one of those
cards. It's just a super value card.
Super value card, yeah. And another card that I like quite a bit that I actually haven't seen played very much.
Stormfront Riders. It's 4 and a white for a human soldier. 4/3 with flying. So that's pretty good already. 5 mana, 4/3 flyer. When Stormfront Riders enters the battlefield, return 2 creatures you control to their owner's hand, which is relevant because the deck will have a lot of Enter the Battlefield effects.
Yep.
And then whenever Stormfront Riders or another creature is returned to your hand from the battlefield, put a 1/1 white soldier creature token onto the battlefield. So
if you have to, you can bounce himself.
Yeah. And you can... And if you do that, you're just making 2 tokens.
Yep, and you get to play them again.
Quote, unquote, for free. I mean, it costs the mana, so...
Yeah.
But if you bounce 2 things with Enter the Battlefield, like an Eternal Witness and an Avenger of Zendikar, you keep all the 0/1s, and you know you make a couple of 1/1s, and then you play the Avenger of Zendikar and the Eternal Witness again, and you get their effects. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so he's mostly there to... You want to rebound stuff that you want to play again. And you also don't want... I mean, if you really have to, you can just do it to himself over and over again and just return another creature with them.
Right.
So you always get 1 back for 5 mana. You can get your Eternal Witness and play it every turn for, you know, an additional 5 mana, which
isn't
the worst.
Or an Elvish Visionary and just draw cards. Or
a
million little things. As long as you build your deck around it, that card's super, super powerful.
Yeah, and for the most part, most of these cards have...
ETB.
ETB effects.
ETB is like the most classic form of value, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's like, well, even if you kill the creatures, I got some effect.
Yeah.
You know, I got some. So, like, you spent a card, you killed my creature, but it had an effect when it came into play. So, I'm still a little bit ahead on that exchange.
Yeah. Another card that I'm actually trying it out. I don't know how it's going to work out. I think this is sort of a one-trick pony, but it's Broodhatch Nantuko. It's a card with morph, so you can play it face down as a 2/2 creature for 3, and then you can flip it up at any time for its morph cost. In this case, it is 2 in a green for a 1/1 creature, so it sounds terrible.
2 in a green is the morph cost. The morph cost. The actual, if you just want to cast it, it's 1 in a green.
Yeah. And it's whenever Broodhatch Nantuko is dealt damage, you may put that many 1/1 green insect creature tokens into play. So it's sort of like a trap card.
So you morph it down.
Playing a morph.
They attack with something big. You block, flip it, and makes... It's like Hornet Nest, kind of.
It's like Hornet Nest, yeah. Except when you have Hornet Nest up, no one will attack you.
Yeah.
Broodhatch Nantuko has the nice ability to be morphed as a 2/2. And
right. Also, it doesn't create flying Death Touch creatures. It just creates 1/1 insects.
Yeah, exactly. But in this case, you're going to be using those for other things.
So. Now, how many morphs do you have in the deck? Because the thing about having only one morph in your deck is like then it's just Hornet Nest because yeah. After people play your deck a couple times, they know, well, that's that thing.
Yeah, that's why I'm trying it out. That's why I don't know exactly how effective it is because the other morph card I definitely would put in here would be Hooded Hydra.
I think that probably should go in there. That card is bonkers, especially in EDH.
Lot of tokens.
Yeah, and it's just like it scales super well with the game so that if you draw it when you've got 11 mana, you just make it an awesome Hooded Hydra. And if you draw it when you only have 3 mana, or
you get a
5/5.
Then you just
morph it.
When you flip it
up.
So those are the two morphies that generate tokens via creatures. Elspeth, of course, is also in here, and she serves as a nice board wipe. We talked about her last week on the top 10 white
She's
cards.
Just a great versatile card in any token deck.
She demands someone that stops her, because being able to put out 3 soldiers every turn is pretty bonkers.
And just being able to put her out and then wipe the board of all creatures power 4 or greater is like oftentimes... Like,
it's enough to really swing the game in your favor.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. The other generation of tokens happens via spells. I think Lingering Souls is one of the most effective cards for doing that, both in like Modern and Standard and stuff.
It's a super powerful card in Modern. Lingering Souls is 2 and a white for a sorcery. Put 2 1/1 white spirit creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield, and then you can flash it back for 1 and a black. So you can get 4 1/1 flyers for a total of 5 mana.
And the important thing here is flashback. Being able to use it twice is very
value,
nice.
Again.
Yeah, super valuable.
And then if you have, you're in a token deck, so you're going to have things like Parallel Lives and Doubling Season. So, that just makes all of these cards, the Avenger of Zendikar, the Nantuko, the Lingering Souls, Elspeth.
Yeah.
It makes them
every
all,
single one of those cards,
Yeah, so you have the chance at just going off.
Yeah. We also include a new commander card from Commander 2014, Sylvan Offering, which was in the green deck. We talked about this card. It's X and a green. Choose an opponent. You and that player each put an XX green tree folk creature token on the battlefield. Choose an opponent. You and that player each put X 1/1 green elf warrior creature tokens on the battlefield.
Okay, so that's a lot of words. Let's just go through it really quick. If you pay green and 10... you'll get a 10-10 and 10-1-1s.
Yep.
And then you choose 2 opponents.
Or 1.
You can either give one opponent a 10-10 and 10-1-1s, or you can give one opponent a 10-10 and the other opponent 10-1-1s.
Yep.
But either way, you get both.
Yeah. And the important thing here is that you're getting more value out of this for the most part because your deck is built to abuse this specifically.
Right.
Whether or not you have sac outlets or pump spells. After playing something like this, I find that it keeps the board state of hostility at a nice even, like
an
no
even
one,
keel.
No one's yeah, no one's like, well, no one's pissed,
right? So
everyone's kind of happy because
this
they're
like, card, like we liked this quite a bit, and a lot of talk. People didn't like this card. I think this is one of those cards where people just don't like cards where the upside is skewed or obfuscated because there's a downside to it, right?
Yeah.
Where you and I tend to not have that problem. We're just like, we'll maximize our upside and minimize our opponent's downside. So you've played this card a couple times. How do you think?
It did extremely well.
Yeah.
Just because every single time you play it and you look at the other 2 players or 3 players and you're like, okay, cool. You can get, you don't have any creatures and you're getting hammered each time. Have some 1/1s.
Right.
And this other guy, like, you can have a 5/5 or whatever.
Yeah.
And for the most part, everyone looks at it and they look at your board. They're like, well, I guess I have an answer in case he swings at me with all his guys because he gave me that answer.
So it didn't feel like he just did something that I need to just like respond
to
exactly.
Right now. Yeah, exactly. A board wipe becomes much less sort of ready to happen because they're like, oh, cool. Now I have stuff. I don't want to board wipe that.
Right.
So I think by doing this, as long as you are min-maxing how much you're getting out of it and how much they're getting out of it, minimizing how much they're getting out of it, it's super effective.
I like that. Yeah, I had high hopes for that card.
Yep. And hopefully it does well. We'll have to test it out in bigger groups, but I have a feeling it's going to do really well. Want to talk about this guy?
Oh, okay. Aura Mutation. It's green and white, so Celestia. Instant. Destroy target enchantment. Put X 1/1 green Slapperling tokens into play where X is its converted mana cost. So it's a disenchant that makes tokens.
Yeah. It's the kind of card that I really like in EDH because it does two things that are always shiny. Important. Yes, and it's shiny.
This is a good foil. I'm like staring at it like a raccoon staring at a shiny object. Ooh. Yeah, it does two things that you want to do. Like, it's way better than just a card that just destroys an enchantment, right?
Mm-hmm. But even that card is quote-unquote playable.
It's fine, yeah.
Because there are enchantments that need to get wrecked.
But you might as well also make some Sapperling tokens while you're at it.
Yep, exactly. And along that line, we also have Marshall Koo, which talked about earlier. It's X and white, and you get to put X 1/1 white soldier creature tokens on the battlefield. If X is 5 or more, destroy all other creatures. So this is like the board wipe that you want to do. It's the board wipe that gets rid of everything and continues your quest to create more tokens and stuff on the battlefield.
So these are the token cards. The token is kind of the win condition in this deck, but you don't have... Like, I have a token deck. We'll probably talk about it someday. And it's like every card in it is making tokens. But your deck's not like that, which I find interesting.
Right.
There's a lot of cards that sort of like, you have a section here called Enchantments Matter.
Yeah, I think the enchantments in white and green and black are among some of the strongest in the game. I think just because you have cards like Academy Rector that is built to go fetch enchantments. You have Doubling Season, you have Parallel Lives, you have Aura Shards. And these are all super good because they are both utility and they are also effect. I mean, like something like Aura Shards is, I think, a card that every single deck...
If you're playing those two colors and you have creatures.
Which I think most people...
If you're playing green and you have no creatures, that's weird.
Yeah, and Aura Shards is one in the green and the white. It's an enchantment that anytime a creature, not just non-token, but a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you can destroy target artifact or enchantment.
It's very, very, very powerful.
Yeah, it's one of those must-answer cards if someone has a board of, like Swords of Light and Shadows and Gilded Lotuses and Soul Rings. And
there's virtually no decks that don't have some enchantments and or artifacts. Mm-hmm. I mean... I can't really think of any that we play with in our group or that I've ever seen that don't have at least a couple of, at least artifacts,
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to have artifacts. If a Soul Ring's not in your deck, then what are you doing? I mean, there are very few cases where you don't need that card. I think Animar is one of them, but even then I would still stick it in that deck just because it's such a good card. Yeah. Leyline of the Void is actually a really interesting card. It's 2/2 black for an enchantment. If Leyline of the Void is in your opening hand, you may begin the game with it on the battlefield. And there's a cycle of these cards that all begin
all
on the battlefield
lines.
If you have them in your opening hand. And it's essentially Anafenz's ability, but more powerful. It's if a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. So not just creatures. It'll take care of spells, instance. Snapcaster Mage will be a very unhappy fellow.
There's decks that sort of, they're doing graveyard stuff, but it's more like Life from the Loam. What is that, Worm Harvest? And, they're just trying to... They don't care if there's creatures in there specifically.
Like, yeah, exactly.
And a fans won't quite destroy those graveyard decks. So, yeah, that's interesting. It's an interesting main deck card. I don't know if I agree or disagree. It seems like if Anafenz has already got you covered in the arena of graveyard hate and she's your general, and so you have access to her, quote-unquote, whenever you want. I mean, she can get tucked. Things can happen. Mm-hmm. Also, though, I can see the other side of the argument, which is like, well, graveyard decks are going to hate me. They're going to come after me no matter what. So I might need a little extra, one more card that deals with them, because if they happen to tuck Anafenz or something, they're coming after me because they have to. So, I might need to make sure that I've got more defense against them. So,
yeah,
I can see both sides of that.
Not to mention, I just think having this in your opening hand is one of the most powerful things in the game, because at that point, it's like, cool, now I don't even need to play my commander. I can just...
It's true, but you're not going to have it in your opening hand very often.
It's true. You have a 7 out of 100 chance.
Yeah, so less than... I don't know what the percentage is. So mathematician out there can tell us, but I think it's probably somewhere around.
Yeah, it's not great. Replenish is in this deck, which you can return all your enchantments from the graveyard to play.
Now that card is awesome.
Yeah, that card is awesome, and the price tag reflects that, of course, too. You also have cards like Sterling Grove, which is a fetch. You can essentially tutor up enchantment with it, and also gives your enchantments.
Sterling Grove is one of those cards we talked about in the overperformers, and it's I don't understand why it doesn't see that much play, and it's not super expensive. It says it's a
both in casting cost and purchase cost.
It's green and a white for an enchantment. It says all other enchantments you control can't be the targets of spells or abilities. So already very playable important. Because you've got enchantments that you want to protect. But then it has pay one and sacrifice Sterling Grove. Search your library for an enchantment card and reveal that card. Then shuffle your library and put that card on top of it. So it's sort of an Enlightened Tutor. You can't get an artifact, but or it just makes your enchantments hexproof, basically.
Yeah, and in a deck where you're trying to toolbox out specific stuff, it's very important if you need to get something like, well, I need an Aura Shards right now, otherwise so-and-so is going to run us over. So enchantments matter in this deck, obviously. Doubling Season, I think, is a give-me. Same with Parallel Lives if you're going to be making tokens. And this is where the deck sort of strays away from token generation, which is creature value. So other creatures that want to either create tokens or do stuff with cards that may be in the graveyard that come back and you want to sort of reuse them. And those cards are, one of my favorite is Reveillarch, just 4W for a 4/3 flyer. And when it leaves the battlefield, return up to 2 target creatures with power 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. And it says, and it has Evoke for 5W. So you can cast a spell for its Evoke cost. If you do, you just sacrifice it when it comes into the battlefield. So because this is a card that leaves the battlefield, the Evoke cost is actually 1 more than the actual casting cost.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, you would have to use this, you would have to play it and find a way to kill it to use its ability immediately, which is why it costs a little bit more.
Reveillarch, super powerful card.
Yeah, and it can fetch out so many sort of creatures that you want to get back. And there's a lot of stuff in here that is just going to be really effective when it dies once, like Eternal Witness being able to get that back on the battlefield. Essentially anything that, especially when you have sack outlets in a deck like this, like Ashnod Altar.
Well, and you're token already, so you're going to want that stuff because you've got like a bunch of 1/1s laying around, and sometimes you want to turn them into mana or cards or whatever, yeah. There's a card you've got in here, which we took a little flack for not putting on our top 10 white cards, was Sun Titan. It's 4W for a creature giant 6/6 with vigilance. But when Sun Titan enters the battlefield or attacks, you may return target permanent card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah.
So
target permanent card. Yeah. I didn't really even realize that when I put it in.
That could be an enchantment.
It could be Sterling Grove. You could search up a new enchantment every single time. It could be Aura Shards again if someone gets rid of that.
It could be Strip Mine.
Yeah. My gosh, you're right. Yeah.
So, Sun Titan, super powerful. Probably should have been at least on our honorable mentions for the top 10 white cards. You know, we just spaced it.
We spaced it.
Sorry. But it's very similar to Reveillarch. So that's something that would maybe be a sub-theme of the deck, is having creature cards, smaller creature cards.
Yeah.
Because now Reveillarch says 2 power or less, and Sun Titan says
converted mana cost
3 or less. But oftentimes those will overlap. Mm-hmm. So something like Sarah Ascendant, for example, or something like that. Although I don't know if Sarah Ascendant belongs in the deck because she doesn't have an Enter the Battlefield effect.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about Reveillarch is that a lot of the really powerful creatures in Magic, the ones that really do some crazy stuff, can cost a lot, but are almost always really weak and not that powerful.
Yeah, the most powerful utility creatures are always...
Yeah, so like the Oracle of Mul'Dai, you could fetch back with Reveillarch.
Right.
And that's a card that...
one of the most powerful...
If people don't kill that immediately, then you are in business.
That's a value card if ever there was one.
Yeah, exactly. So that's creature value, and then... The fifth category, I think, is cards you might not think of, / what I like to call fun time board wipes.
Fun time board wipes!
And at the top of that list is a card called Living Death.
And oh yeah, Living Death is...
This is a card in a board wipe that usually just doesn't get played, because the value that other people can get out of it is going to sometimes be way more than what you can do from it. It's 3/2 black for a sorcery. Each player exiles all creature cards from his or her graveyard, then sacrifices all creatures he or she controls, then puts all cards he or she exiled this way onto the battlefield.
Oh, this is just mean with Anafenza.
Yeah, so essentially any creature card that's in your graveyard gets exiled. You kill everything on the board, and then you take all the creature cards from your graveyard and put them back onto the battlefield.
You just take all the creatures in your graveyard, put them into play, and kill all the creatures you already had in play before
that. Exactly.
But Anafenza doesn't let them have any creature cards in their graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the only one that gets this effect.
Yeah, and even if Anafenza comes out a little bit later and only gets rid of, say, like half of what's happened so far in the game, you're still going to benefit more off of this than everyone else.
Yeah.
Especially if,
plus, you've got sack outlets, right?
Yeah,
you just sack all your dudes first. They're all in your graveyard. So then what, you know,
you get mana from Ashland's Altar for doing it. You can play this for super cheap.
And then it's like Living Death actually doesn't kill any of your creatures. They're in your graveyard now, so it just brings them back.
It gets a little awkward when you have cards like Suntime where he hits it and you're like, oh, wait, Suntime has nothing to target because everything's been killed. So yeah, Living Death is one of those fun time board wipes. Same with Marshall Coup. It's the things that do more for you than everyone else, but also do a very powerful effect, which is in this case a board wipe.
Yeah, Marshall Coup is white and X. Put X 1/1 white soldier creature tokens onto the battlefield. If X is 5 or more, destroy all other creatures.
Yeah, so just ruin everyone.
Yeah, if you've got 8 or 9 mana, you can make 7, 8, 9 1/1 tokens and destroy all the rest of the creatures.
Yeah.
You know, again, with Doubling Season out, that can oftentimes just win.
Another card I don't know if this is actually a good card or not yet. It's called Cobra Trap. It's 4 and 2 green for an instant trap. And these trap cards, they all sort of usually have an alternative casting cost if something happens on the battlefield. So in this case, if a non-creature permanent under your control was destroyed this turn by a spell or an ability an opponent controls, you may pay green instead of the casting cost. So you can pay just one green, and you put 4/1/1 green snake creature tokens on the battlefield. And in a deck that's running a ton of enchantments and running things that people want to destroy, like Doubling Seasons... I like this a lot just because it's 1 green for 4. And who knows if this is something that actually will happen very often and they'll be able to trigger it a lot. But I'm trying it out right now. I want to see what the viability of a card like this is.
I feel like it's pretty viable. Like, you've got enough enchantments. You know, also people will do things once in a while, like destroy a land or an artifact, and then you can do this. So I feel like it's going to be useful. You're going to find out whether or not, you know, it's one of those 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
Or you know, it's more like 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it, when I say that, it was referenced to earlier when he said it was useful 3 out of 10 times. Because if 7 out of 10 times you can't use it, then yeah, it probably needs to go.
Yeah, definitely. And outside of that, sort of, that is the...
Can I make a suggestion?
Oh, yes, please.
There's, I think Cathar's Crusade is sort of a perfect card for this deck.
Yes.
Yeah, Cathar's Crusade is, it's an enchantment. It's 3 and 2 white. It says, whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control. So it works well with Living Death. Mm-hmm. It works well with tokens. It works really well with bouncing your own creatures and replaying them, which are all things that you want to do. So, yeah. You know, because I could see right now a thing where you make a lot of tokens, but you need to pump them in some way.
Yeah, they're all just
know?
Little weaklings.
Yeah, and Coat of Arms might be okay, although I haven't looked specifically whether your soldier spirit. Usually these, you're going to have enough spirits or soldiers to make Coat of Arms still worth it.
Yeah, like they're 5/5s.
Even if, like, I've got 10 tokens and 5 are this and 5 are that, you just pick one and, you know, usually spirits.
And they're all giant.
Yeah, and kill somebody. Yeah. But Cathar's Crusade, you know, could just sit out there and make all your, you know, you play Marshall Coup with Cathar's Crusade out.
Oh, gosh.
And you destroy everybody else's creatures and make 7/7/7s or 7/8/8s or however the math works out. But that's a win the game now instead of just, like, wipe the board and have some presence left. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Good recommendation. Yeah. Thanks. No problem. I like these cards, too, better than the ones that just sort of anthem you up and do a +1/+1 across the board, because I think this has a lot more ability to go past the +1/+1.
I mean, it can super be broken, because, you've got a lot of cards, like, let's say that Cobra Trap. Mm-hmm. Well, the Cobra Trap, if you have an Anthem out that gives them +1/+1, you make 4 2/2s. If you have Cathar's Crusade out, now you make 4 5/5s.
Yeah, because they all get +1s.
Yeah, so it's pretty crazy. I think that'd be a really strong card. I would say maybe 1 or 2 Anthem effects are probably in order.
Yeah, I think they work. I think my favorite Anthem in this is just Mirari's Wake, because it doubles your mana and gives everyone +1/+1.
That card is awesome.
Also, importantly, is you're going to need to protect these cards, especially because you have a lot of tokens, and you can't just do sort of one card for one here. You need to do stuff like Golgari Charm, which is in a modal spell for black and green. You can choose one. All creatures get -1/-1 until end of turn. So usually you won't do that unless someone else is going crazy with their own
tokens.
Yeah,
but it's useful
tokens.
As something.
Yeah. Or destroy target enchantment, always useful. Or regenerate each creature you control.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's definitely the one there.
And if somebody does a board wipe where... Although, like, Wrath of Gods won't let you regenerate, but, you know, like, Supreme Verdict will.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's also Ready and Willing, which is one of those sort of fused cards where it's half split. You can do one of both halves.
Yeah, split cards.
Yeah, split cards. So the ready side says, creatures you control are indestructible this turn and untap each creature you control for 1 green and a white. And then the Willing side is 1 white and a black, and creatures you control gain Death Touch and Lifelink until end of turn.
So you can pay both costs and do both. and just destroy somebody, or you can just save all your dudes.
Yeah, so for 6 mana, you can gain a ton of life and untap everything. It's a great combat trick. And I feel like you only need a couple of these in your deck, because having more of them, it's like you're not going to face it that many times that having more. It's a very delicate balance where if you have like 5 of these, you know, I'd say most of the time you're going to draw one when you really don't need it and you'd rather have something else.
The problem, it's the same with Anthem effects in token decks. Like, we've talked about this in the past, but if you're a deck and you have, you know, 60% of your deck is token generators and 40% is Anthem effects, you're going to have all these games, or 40% is protect your tokens. They're going to have all these games where you could protect tokens, but you just don't have any.
Yep.
You know, or you... So what you want... Like, if they destroy all your tokens, but you have more token generating cards, you're okay.
Yeah.
You just rebuild. But if they, you know, if they go to destroy all your tokens, but you don't have any, and all you've got is protect my tokens cards in your hands, then you're not okay. Because... Yeah. They don't even have to destroy your cards. You're just doing nothing. So it's better to just err on the side of more token stuff and less of the Anthem effects and the sort of protect your token stuff. Although you still need some of them.
And that's a balance you'll find, too, with the more you play a deck like this, to figure out where the sweet spot is. Because it's also going to depend on your meta. If it's always just like your meta is just like everyone will always have a board wipe, then you're going to need to put a little more of these in there to make sure that you...
Then you're going to want Soul of New Phyrexia. You're going to want Avacyn. You're going to want, you know, you're going to want more things
exactly.
like that. You know, Avacyn and Soul might be okay in this deck because they're also creatures.
Yeah.
So those type of effect might be good.
And finally, we have finishers. How do you kill everyone?
Oh, I see you've got the mother of all finishers.
Yep, there's one big daddy, Crater Hoof Behemoth.
Woo! Crater Hoof Behemoth. Let me read it really quick, although I think we've read it like many times.
Yeah, it's one of those cards we talk about quite often.
It's sort of the go-to for this thing, and it's... The go-to for this for a reason. It's 5 and 3 green, so 8 total for a creature beast of 5/5. It has haste. But when Crater Hoof Behemoth enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain trample and +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control.
Yeah. It's the ultimate finisher. Trample is the most important thing here, because even if they can block everyone, you're still going to be trampling over four. If you have 9 creatures, they'll get +9/+9 in trample.
Yeah, I don't know. The +9/+9 part might be just as important. Either way...
It's true. But like if they have tokens too, and they're like, oh, jump block, it's like, well, they trample over.
You almost never play Crater Hoof Behemoth and don't at least kill one or two people. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, oftentimes you just play it and win. It's just one of those cards you just hold in your hand until the moment where coast is clear, people's mana is tapped, you know, and then it's just math. You know,
how many creatures do
I have? How much life total is everybody at?
Yeah,
how much can they block with? You know, and usually you can.
And not to mention, you can bounce this guy and flicker him, and with all of the other cards in this deck, they can do it. So, another card that it's sort of a pet card of mine. It's Eldrazi Monument. It's a 5-drop artifact. Actually, it's not on the deck list. I just put it in again because I was like, you know what? I need at least one more of these effects to ensure that I can potentially win. And it's creatures you control get +1/+1, have flying, and are indestructible.
That seems pretty good.
Yeah, for 5 mana. And it says at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature if you can't sacrifice Eldrazi Monument. And in a token deck, that should never be a problem.
And even if you have to, you just Eternal Witness, get it back, or regrowth, or, you know, green... and black are both very good at getting things from your graveyard. So
yeah, exactly.
Actually, white's okay at it too. So yeah, that's pretty awesome. Actually, that's a really good card. Really good addition.
Yeah.
This card. So let's talk about ways to maybe fight this deck. We already talked about board wipes. I think board wipes against token decks in general.
In general, yeah, are always going to be good.
Yeah, they're always going to be good.
Cards that, like, you know, just a single card like Elesh Norn. Or a Massacre Worm, I think, that just has an Anthem negative effect and kills everything like that way. That definitely hoses a deck like this, too.
It can hurt it a lot, but I think you could still do some stuff.
Yeah.
I'd say what we call mass creature hate, so stuff like Propaganda, Ghostly Prison.
Right.
That's probably going to make life a little bit tough, just because it allows you to have all those creatures, but you have to pay tons of mana every time you want to attack with one of them.
Yeah.
So that could be tough.
Unless I have a ton of mana, thanks to a card like... no. That's way too much mana. It's
I mean, three per
creature.
The thing about Ghostly Prison and things like that are, like, they'll hold it off for a while, but they're not, you know...
They will eventually get overrun.
Yeah, because even if you can only attack with 3 or 4, it's usually going to be enough.
Yeah, exactly. it's funny, actually. Graveyard Hate is a way to beat this deck as well.
Is it? I don't see a ton of stuff that you want to get from your graveyard. I mean, you have the ability to, but, like...
Well, the thing is, like, a card, like, it does turn off a significant portion amount of the deck. So Sun Titan gets turned off. Living Death gets turned off.
I mean, but Sun Titan's still a big dude with Vigilance.
It's true. It's still a big dude with Vigilance. I just think that because you're doing Graveyard Hate of Your Own and you're trying to be a little cute with the idea that I'm using my graveyard better than you guys are using your graveyard, that people can get rid of certain things, just having an E-Witness and a Flicker Wisp in the deck is enough to be like, okay, this guy wants to do stuff with his graveyard that...
Right, but I don't think that I would prescribe Graveyard Hate to somebody who was playing against your deck.
True.
You know,
that's a way to fight the deck. Maybe it's not
I think
a way
it might be a little
deck.
Annoying for you, but yeah. In general, like, most of your stuff will still do what it wants to. Like, yeah. You know, Avenger's Endicard doesn't care. Anaphansa doesn't really care. You know, Crater Hoof Behemoth doesn't care. Those cards.
It hurts his feelings, but he doesn't really care.
He doesn't really care if you've got Graveyard Hate or you don't, you know. And it, like, Lingering Souls are sort of mildly annoyed by it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Not that much.
Well, another thing we can also talk about is just being able to consistently remove the enchantments that make this deck really powerful.
Well, if you're playing a token deck, never allow Doubling Season or Parallel Lives to make it to their untap phase, because you're dead. You'll die. Like that.
Yeah.
Those cards are incredibly powerful, you know, because it turns cards that make four dudes into cards that make eight dudes.
Yeah.
And if they've got Cathar's Crusade or Coat of Arms, I mean, that's just, you just win.
Yeah.
So, you know, another suggestion I would make is, because one thing the deck might be missing is haste.
Yeah.
So Concordant Crossroads or a Chroma's Memorial, something that just gives haste to all your dudes. Because one of the things token decks are generally good at are, like, putting out a bunch of tokens in one turn, like an obscene amount, right? Like 50 tokens come into play. The problem is that if you can't kill somebody right at that moment,
you're
then,
so vulnerable.
Yeah, you got to hope that player 2, 3, 4, and 5 don't have Wrath of God in hand. And, you know, the bigger the game, the more likely that somebody will have a board wipe. So, you know, but if you have something like a Chroma's Memorial, which is a 7-mana artifact, it gives all your creatures flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, protection from red and black, and the most important thing, haste.
Haste.
Yeah. So if you have something like that, you play that, everyone's like, okay. And then your next turn, you make 40 tokens and attack everyone. And then it's just like, you know, you just win. So.
I mean, if you're lucky, you do it in the same turn.
Yeah, it's just a Chroma's Memorial costs 7 mana, so you got to... I mean, if you can, yeah, of course.
Yeah, town.
Yeah, that's the other thing I would say. Just all token decks probably want you know, a couple of haste effects.
And I'd say the last thing, sort of on that same vein, is to fight this deck is you can also just be faster than the deck is and just constantly put the token deck on their back foot and force them to make tokens to block as opposed to be on the aggressive side. And I think tokens are much worse when they have to be on the blocking side, because then you're just sort of bleeding out really quickly. And and if you're struggling to stay afloat as a token deck, you're not where a token deck wants to be ever.
Yeah, token decks sort of want to get set up, too. They want to get in this nice position where it's like, oh, I've got my Cathar's Crusade out, and I've got my Doubling Season out, and I've got the card in hand that's I'm going to play it, and the card says make 4 tokens, but really now it's going to make 10 in there, and it says make 1/1s, but really they're going to be 9/9s.
9/9s, yeah.
You know, and it needs to do step 1, step 2, and then step 3, and if you can thwart that, you know, if you can either kill them first or thwart that plan of like, oh, I take away your step 1 and step 2. And now it's like, well, now I'm making 4 1/1s. That card, you know, it relies on synergy very heavily.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, being able to remove the synergy off the board and just make sure that someone can't get their combos going is definitely a way to shut down token decks.
Well, so, cool, man. It looks fun. I'm anxious to play against it. I guess anxious might not be the
anxious?
Right word.
Anxious? You are super stoked.
I have trepidation.
Trepidation.
I'm trepidacious? Is that a word?
I
don't know. It's bodacious.
Yeah, this deck's bodacious, dude. If we're going to do an American accent, just go to Surfer America. Yeah, I'm
Surfer
interested.
America?
Yeah, man. Surfer
is that
America,
a place?
Bro.
Yes, it's where we're from, actually.
Yeah, California. yeah, I'm interested, too. This deck is definitely a work in progress. We'll put the deck list up there, and I'll be constantly updating it, too. And, of course, if you guys have token strategies or found certain things that you think work much better with tokens that we haven't talked about, leave us a comment. We'd love to hear it.
Very cool. All right, ready for the end step?
Yes, but before we hit the end step, there are still two people that have not emailed us about the giveaways on the iTunes reviews.
Guys, The last two episodes, we announced winners. You can win cool stuff.
Yeah, we got one from each episode, but we're still missing two. So if you are one of those winners, email us. Otherwise, I suppose next week we can just announce new ones potentially.
I don't know what the statute of limitations should be on the thing. We've got something else to give away. I was going to talk about it in an end step. So
okay.
Well here's the thing. If you're a winner and you have not already emailed us your name and address, we can't send you the prize. And why don't we give you until... We're going to give you a couple more weeks here, but if we haven't heard from you, let's say after February.
The Super Bowl is over.
No, because that's going to be...
I know, it's next week.
Actually, you will... it's next week. Yeah, so let's just say by March 1st. So if we haven't heard... Anybody we haven't heard from, we're just going to have to give your prize away because we're going to assume you're not listening. Mm-hmm. So,
and there are a lot of other people that are listening that want them prizes.
So you might get another chance. And we give stuff away all the time. So yeah, you're going to get another chance at stuff anyway. Speaking of which...
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. So, end step. Time for our cool things.
Cool things.
Do you want to go first or do you want to...
My cool thing for this week is the Seattle Seahawks, my hometown team, are going to the Super Bowl.
Woo-hoo!
All us Magic players are either not caring about this or really not caring.
Well,
a lot of
Magic players are from Seattle.
It's true.
Wizards of the Coast is in Renton, yeah. Washington,
which is right near there. Seeing tweets from like Wizards official people being, you know, with Seahawks love and stuff, and it's like, hey, here we go.
Just make sure everybody inflates the footballs to the correct amount.
Correct. Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'm from Portland, so we don't have an NFL team, but we're very, you know, close to Seattle. Yeah. So it's kind of our adopted team.
We are more than happy to be your adopted
I don't have the
parent.
Same amount of fervor that you do, but go Hawks. And also, I like Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I like Pete, too.
I was a fan of him when he was at USC.
As my friend calls him, Slippery Pete.
Slippery Pete.
He always finds a way to win.
He does.
He does.
So go Hawks. Sorry if you're a Patriots fan.
I'm not that sorry if you're a Patriots fan. You guys have won lots of titles.
They're pretty good.
They are very good.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great game either way. I really look forward to football games like this because two really good teams playing each other. There's nothing better than that.
Yeah. All right, my cool thing is, well, a few months ago, you might remember that Jimmy and I went with the Rocket Jump crew, and we played BlizzCon in what was called the BlizzCon Brawl, and we played Heroes of the Storm.
More like BlizzCon Beatdown of the poor
noobs. I won't talk about how our performance was, but Blizzard has given us some beta keys for Heroes of the Storm.
I can't believe it's in beta. The game is beautiful.
I mean... I forgot it wasn't in beta. I've been playing the alpha this whole time. And, you know, Blizzard is just amazing with how, you know, crisp and polished their games are, even at an early state. So the beta, they sent out a bunch of beta keys. Jimmy has a bunch. I have a few. Here's the thing. We're both going to be giving away beta keys.
Yep.
So follow. I don't know how you're giving yours away.
On Twitter, most likely.
On Twitter is how I'm going to do it. But Jimmy's got 100,000 Twitter followers.
Yeah.
So your odds of getting a beta key from Jimmy are just way lower. I have like 250 Twitter followers. So if you are interested in getting a Heroes of the Storm beta key, follow me on Twitter. And in the next week, I will figure out some way to give those out. And your odds...
I have really good odds if I follow you. Can I enter? Oh, wait, I have keys. Okay, sorry. I was so enraptured by the idea.
You already have access to the beta.
I was like, man, those are great odds.
So, yeah, I'll figure out some way. I don't want to give out the keys to somebody who's not interested in playing either, so I'll probably check with my followers to make, you know, to see who wants a key. And then, but, so then you'll have an even better chance, because there's a number of my followers that won't, you know, they won't be interested in playing it at all. But if you do want a Heroes of the Storm beta key, and you're not a follower of mine on Twitter, hit that follow button and pay attention in the next week, and you'll have a chance.
Yeah, at Josh Lee Kwai. Of course, it's all in the show notes. And if you guys want to play Powerball odds, you can go ahead and follow me on Twitter and try and win that way.
At least there's a chance. I mean, you might as well follow both.
Here's the thing, like, it really depends on what time of day I tweet something. Yeah. Sometimes I get, you know, it was like, sometimes I'll say something random about the State of the Union. It's like, 50 retweets, and other times I'll also be like, man, I spent like 10 minutes crafting this tweet, and it's like one retweet. So as long as you're on top of it, you could have a very good chance to win. And yeah, we'll have all the details on how we're giving them away on our channel and all that. Not our channel, on our Twitter channels, I guess, and all that.
All right, cool. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening.
Make sure you guys leave comments. We love reading your comments.
Yeah, actually, help Jimmy build this deck to be
even
as awesome as possible.
Yes, yes, help
me. Why am I telling them to do that? You're just going to crush me with it then.
Yes.
You've got all
I am all for, yes. I'm all for crowdsourced deck ideas. I think it's great.
It's like crowdstorming.
Yeah, crowdstorming.
Like brainstorming, but yeah. Crowdstorming.
Storm count, however many people want to help me.
Storm count one, go.
Storm count one. Cast my commander. Storm count one. Oh, man. This game just got serious. All right, cool. Thanks so much for listening, guys. And we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.